welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast. I'm Gemma Rosenthal and my business is Creative Hearts. I'm a singer-songwriter, dancer, actor, choreographer, and I help you to find your voice and live your most creative life. On this show, we talk about everything storytelling. And my co-host is...
Chris Sissons, and my business is Market Together. I'm a local marketing coach specializing in storytelling for marketing and business development. On today's show, we're going to explore the joys of copywriting, how we pay artists for their work, and anonymous legacies.
Yes, this time we are delighted to introduce our guest, Sarah English, who is a copywriter and content creator. Sarah writes for businesses of all sizes worldwide. She becomes their voice to their customers. She is also a social media manager, where she handles all aspects of social media, including designing, scheduling, profile writing, and blogging. She also writes and designs websites. She's written several online courses to A-level standard, including how to start your own business, business administration, and English language. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Gemma. Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm here to talk about my journey of how I began as a copywriter.
Fantastic. We're really pleased to have you.
So when I was younger, I loved stories. I loved writing. I loved making up things. And I've pretty much always had my head in the clouds, dreaming. And I pretty much wrote all the way through my childhood. I loved English at school. After leaving school, I went straight into work as an office, as most 16-year-old girls of my generation did. I soon moved into sales, into corporate sales. It was just a job for me. I was good at it. I loved working in sales, but it was just a job. It wasn't what I enjoyed doing. In my spare time, I undertook several writing diplomas, including creative writing, and loved doing that. So I always wanted to be a writer, but didn't really know how I was going to do it, because, you know, yes, I could write a book, but I didn't even know how to go about doing it. Would I be able to make any money off it? When in my after 9 years in corporate sales, the business that I worked for was bought out by an even bigger business, and I just decided it wasn't for me. It wasn't something that I wanted to carry on doing. I was desperate to work for myself. So I started out doing some online courses in fundamentals of digital marketing, you name it, any course I could take, I took it. I began writing my website and putting everything together. I did some work for free just to get some testimonials together. And then on the 22nd of July 2019, I launched my business write idea. And I don't think I've actually looked back since. It was the best thing that I ever did. Making the decision that I wanted to write for a living and actually doing something about it, and sitting here 3 years later talking about, you know, how it has actually changed my life. But not only that, it's great for me to look at a business and go, you're so underselling yourself. There's so much, you know, that you can do. And knowing how I can help businesses to be seen online, to have copy that is going to reach their customers, but not just reach them on a face value, on a soul level. Really believe in the written word is the key to everything. And Chris, I'm sure as a storyteller yourself, you will agree with that one. So, and that's me. That's how I started.
I love that. I love how you said about that it's not just about reaching the customers, but it's also about reaching them on a soul level. Because you know, that's just, it's so important, isn't it, that we don't just do businesses that are just sort of there, not for any deeper purpose, but it's really important that we have that deeper level. And when we're reaching people, we are reaching on that level as well. Could you talk a little bit more about what it was about specifically writing for you that I'm guessing that you find that nourishes your soul, and how is it that writing specifically called to you?
I love how words can move you, can change your emotions, can affect your mood, it can make you happy, can make you sad. When writing connects on an emotional level, it's incredibly powerful. And I think I always knew deep down that that writing can, well, actually can not just enhance a business, but actually take them to a next level. And I think because with my sales background, I understand how to write copy that isn't the hard sell copy. I do not write hard sell copy, but will broach subjects like pain points of customers and reach them on that emotional level, because I think you don't get the engagement unless they feel something from what they're reading. So nothing, you know, they're not going to take action if you just say, this is a great product, and then that's it. No one wants, you know, what you're going to trust out of that on face value. But then it's something, this, you know, if you were to word that, it'd be, this product will benefit you in such and such way. You know, you've had an issue with this. However, this product is going to, you know, this is the benefits that this product is going to give you. And I think when you're writing copy, it's incredibly important that you keep all the values of that client as well. And it's very clever, and I've always been fascinated by the way words are put together, because it can tell a story of that client, who they are, who, what they represent, what they stand for, in just a bit of sales copy. So, you know, say if you've got a company that is particularly eco-friendly, then you would write something, and it was sales copy, but they want to sell their products, and obviously you are promoting the fact that they are not just selling eco-friendly products, but they are an eco-friendly business within themselves as well. So everything they do surrounds and supports what they're actually selling. And I think so when I first started writing, I would write anything. I'd write books, poetry, songs, and even a journal. I wrote a journal from about the age of 7. I think I've got a journal from. And I think journaling, again, is, it's storytelling. It's putting those words together. And as you get older, you get better with putting words together and, you know, knowing what to say and what not to say. And like, forget all grammar and spelling and put all of that aside. It's once you've got the bare bones of what you want to achieve from that writing, that piece of writing, then the rest of it is secondary, because you need to have a good picture of what you want to achieve.
Yeah. Chris, have you got any questions you'd like to ask Sarah?
Yes. Yes, I do. I've noticed, I mustn't touch the microphone. I've noticed you've been going for almost 3 years, and for over 2 of those 3 years, it's been lockdown and post-lockdown. And I was just wondering what sort of impact lockdown has had on your business. Has it enhanced things or made it more difficult?
I have to say that I've been one of the lucky ones, that lockdown did actually enhance my business, but only because of the work that I put behind it. My business was 7 months old when lockdown struck. So of course everyone was like, oh, typical sod's law, it's only going to last a couple of weeks. Who'd have known, you know, 2 years on, we're still suffering the impact of it. What I did, because I realized that everyone was forced online, everyone had to work online, and that was an opportunity for me then to get people to look and review at their, say, their website or whatever that might not have been updated for the last 5-6 years, but can look very dated straight away, and especially with the copy. And I started working with a lot of companies because they had that time to go, all of a sudden they're not in the office, they haven't got people coming in to interrupt them every 5 minutes, that they could actually reflect on their business and what could drive more customers to them. Whereas before, it was, you know, they may have not have had an issue with people just coming to them naturally and not really having to promote themselves. And companies then through lockdown were like, we've got to work a different way. And I think that was good for me, because people were being reflective on their business and going, I need to do something, because if I don't do something with my website, with my social media presence and all that sort of thing, then they're going to basically lose the business. So I was very lucky in that respect, and I'll be forever grateful for that. But I think another good thing is that even though now we're back into, you know, pretty much as we were, people now have learned that actually, do you know what? I can work online. I can do more in the way of social media. I can do more in the way of blogging and engaging customers, whereas they might never have really considered that before. So I think now sort of companies are looking at how they engage with customers. I think they're seeing more of an importance in their copy, which of course is great for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was lockdown when I started my blog as well, on Seventh Wave. And it's definitely, using online tools is definitely a way to reach people in a different way, because you can use the written word but in shorter terms, so it doesn't have to be a full book, it can just be a short story. Yeah. And you can also use videos as well, which I use a lot of. And yeah, just it's just a different type of way of engaging clients or customers, and it's quite fun as well because they can respond.
Yeah.
So there's that interaction. Whereas if it's using, you know, if you're on stage or if it's using a book or something, there can be some interaction, but it's more of a formal setting. Whereas on social media, you can have that informal sort of feel to it.
I think you can have a lot of fun with social media.
Although I do enjoy being back in reality as well.
Don't we all? No, I think social media, I think, because people often saw it as just a bit of a, you know, bit of a time, a sponge, really. So, you know, it wasn't really focused, especially like Facebook wasn't really, I don't think, fully utilized for business, where in actual fact it is a perfect platform for business, as is LinkedIn. But I'm now in the process of learning TikTok, because TikTok can be useful for business too. So as all these different channels come out, it's great for a social media manager to get on top of those and to know, like, to give a client options on video content, on, you know, posting a carousel, stories, you name it, you know, to have that mix. And I think people are more used to now seeing that wide range of social media, you know, posts and stuff. So yeah, I think it's, you know, lockdown, for all its many bad things, I think is really positive in the way that, you know, how people do look at their business and how they do look at their interactions with the customers.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that came out, I'm pretty sure, did this podcast idea Did that come out of lockdown, Chris, or did we start before? Yeah, no, so it was, this podcast is out one of lockdown. The examples of something that came out of lockdown, because now we can talk to people all over the world and interview them without them having to come to us. And yeah, it's great.
So have you brought a story along for us, Sarah?
Okay, so, not a wonderful story. It's actually a bit of a, it's a sad story with a happy ending, if that makes any sense. So I struggled massively with my mental health. I had a breakdown when I was 18, which anyone would say, like, having a nervous breakdown at 18 is pretty damn horrific. And I then had many, many years of struggling with my mental health. I've been on medication for forever, and I'm never likely to be off it. But the one thing that I tried everything. I tried CBT, I tried hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, you name it, I tried it and nothing worked. But the thing that I found the hardest was actually I suffer with terrible panic attacks and anxiety attacks, and I never seemed to be able to get in control of those up until it was actually right before I started my business, which is hard to believe, where I had this like training, and I was taught how to look at anxiety and depression differently. So instead of saying, I have an illness, this is what defines me, this is who I am, and, you know, thinking that it's a part of every single day life, what this training did was make me think about things in a different way, and it turned it on its head. So instead, I would be like, anxiety and depression, yeah, happens, you know, just whatever, you know, if it comes, if it happens, it happens, if it doesn't, it doesn't. If I have a panic attack in the middle of a supermarket, doesn't matter. And I kind of, as soon as that happened, it was like a light bulb moment for me, and I stopped letting anxiety and depression define who I was as a person. And I think when I came to start my business, I was coming out of that real hard time of, you know, I mean, I'm talking 20 odd years of being like that and feeling like that. And then all of a sudden gone, you know what, doesn't define me. This is not who I am. And it wasn't then until I actually found myself. And I don't even know where I found the courage to start a business that when you're actually feeling like, I have no idea where I found the strength to do it. But in actual fact, doing it has led to where I am today. I never would have thought about going on a podcast or going on live interviews or even running in lockdown. I started a networking meeting. I never would have done that. I hated being on camera. I didn't like being centre of attention. And now I take it all in my stride, and it's all, everything that I went through has built the person that I am today. And, you know, I'm incredibly lucky to have been able to come out of it, because I know how difficult it is for some people, and I know through lockdown how many people suffered. But I think, you know, that's the biggest story of my life, the fact that I have been through it. But in actual fact, you can find a way out of it.
Absolutely. I mean, thank you so much for bringing that story to us. Did it have more? Sorry, did I interrupt you?
No, not at all, no.
No? Okay. I actually have a really similar story myself. And Chris knows a bit about my story, where I was in a mental hospital, and I share about my story in various books and interviews online. And it is true, you know, you can get through it and you can come out the other side of it. And being able to tell your story on here and share that you have come out the other side of it, and to see those things as not something that who you are, but something that happens to you. And Chris always says to us, you know, we have more than one story, and, you know, sometimes we think that this is our, you know, especially when it's mental health based, we can think that that's, you know, the only thing in our life, and because it overtakes doesn't it? And then Chris helped me realize that there's so many different things that happen to us, and that's just one of them. And it's so great that you've shared it, because I recently did a talk with BT Design, who I've designed some cards with, on self-love and creativity. And we did a live for Mental Health Awareness Week. Yep. And sharing our stories is so important to reach out to others who may be struggling with anxiety or depression, and they might be feeling like, this is something that's going to be the rest of my life. I'm never going to get through it. If you can talk, so you mentioned about one person that had helped you with something that they said and changing your perspective on it. Was there anything else that really helped you get through it? Because I know for me, creativity can be really, really helpful, and having things that are meaningful, and having supportive friends as well. All of these things, they kind of work together to support mental health. So could you mention any other things that you found successful?
So, I mean, first and foremost was my very, very patient other half. Mark has been so brilliant with me. He's sat on the floor with me when I'm having a full-on anxiety attack. It was such a learning curve for him, because for anyone witnessing someone having an anxiety attack, and I'm talking full-on on the floor, not being able to breathe kind of anxiety attack, he learned how he would give me my space. There was no way he would hold me or touch me when I was having one, but he would start breathing with me and sitting with me on the floor, breathing it through until I calmed down. And he knows, you know, he would learn little things, like he would see a panic on my face sometimes if we went into, say, a supermarket. He could tell, even before I knew, that I was going to have an anxiety attack, because he noticed the change in my behaviour, and I didn't even notice it, but he would be able to predict when I was going to have a panic attack. And so he was absolutely brilliant and so incredibly patient with me. But I think I started talking a lot online about my mental health issues, not because, you know, I want people to go, oh my God, that must be awful, I feel sorry for you, but because I want to help other people to understand that how they're feeling now is temporary, that there are things that they can do to be able to cope day by day, to build up their mental resilience. I found cutting out negative people from my life was incredibly powerful for me, because I'm an empath, so anyone's negative feelings around me would greatly impact me. And I would be left with feeling down and negative, rather than they've gone on to the next thing. So, but I would be left with that feeling. So I learned to distance myself from people who would make me feel that way. And also not being afraid to talk about it and to be very open about it. Because I think as soon as you start to not talk about it, it's in effect hiding how you're feeling. And actually you shouldn't, because when you just, even if you just write it out on a piece of paper how you're feeling, or speak it out loud, immediately you feel better, you feel lighter for doing that. And I think I started doing lots of like live interviews and, you know, talking about, you know, where I came from, the fact that I have had I do suffer with depression and anxiety, but there are tools that you can do to cope with it on a day by day basis. So yeah, I think it's, I don't think it's ever anything that's going to be truly gone. Like I say, I'll still be on the medication, but can I cope with it on a day-to-day basis? You're damn right I can, because I know that if I'm feeling low, that feeling's only temporary.
Yeah.
Something that I've been talking with a group of my friends, that includes someone who has an undiagnosed mental health issue. He's had it for, must be at five, between 5 and 10 years now. It's a long, long time. And there's a debate going on amongst mental health doctors as to the value of diagnoses. Because what a diagnosis does is it tends to label you so that you become the condition. That's a general you, not you two in particular. I think it's there's something here about what is it that defines me as a person. You know, do I really want to be known as the person with X, whatever X is? And it might not be a mental health issue. It might be to do with sexuality or gender issues or whatever. But I do, you know, wonder how you sort of cope with that. To what extent does it define you as a person?
I think if the key there is where you say depression and anxiety doesn't define me as a person. And I think as soon as you make that conscious decision to say, do you know what, I'm not being defined by this. It's not, you know, something that is just going to be my thing. It is something that, you know what, yeah, okay, I've got it, but I can deal with it. I can, you know, get through this. And it's not something that's going to define my character, because there's a lot more to me than anxiety and depression. So I think, like you say, when you are diagnosed, it does pigeonhole you into, you know, you have this condition. Well, do you know what? I've got a bit of eczema as well, but I'm not going to come across as a victim of having eczema. And it's the same with anxiety and depression. And I think sort of people put this whole thing around it that, you know, yes, it is an illness. I'm not denying that it is, but it's up to you to make that decision if you let it define you or not. And I chose not to let it define me. And I think, like, I'm a lot, you know, talking about it helps. It has definitely helped me, but I don't talk about it because it's still helping me to talk about it. I talk about it to help other people, because I know what it feels like. And I think unless you've really gone through it yourself, I don't think you could really truly understand what it is to go through it. I mean, you go through sort of like, you know, when you have suicidal thoughts, I mean, in the cold light of day, you wouldn't even consider that sort of thing. But, you know, I can say that I've been there several times in my life. And when you're going through a really good time, it's unmentionable. You don't even think about something like that. But where you are at your darkest hour, then it's perfectly plausible at that time. So, you know, I think I share my story to help others and to let them know that they're not alone, and that, you know, there is help out there, and, you know, they can talk about it, and there is places to go where, you know, you're not going to be judged. You're not going to have people say you've got to do this or you've got to do this, because you need to find what works for you, because what works for one person is not going to work for another. So, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy did not work for me at all, whereas talking to people, sharing blogs and stuff like that, and sharing my story on podcasts and different media like this, Well, that helps me.
Okay. So, yeah, Gemma, I was going to say, do you want to finish this topic and start the next one?
Well, I'll actually use this topic to sort of go into the next one. So, yeah, in terms of, well, first of all, just thank you once again for sharing your story with us and for bringing up such an important topic as well that I know a lot of our listeners will want to hear about, because I really want people to know that, you know, we're talking about this important topic that they can then get the benefits from. So when it comes to my own mental health journey, there's so many things that have worked for me. I know you were talking about CBT, so I actually had CBT as well, and I realized that I needed something a bit more than just CBT. So I do agree with, I do think CBT works on a mental level. It doesn't work on an emotional level. And I think, well, I'm saying it doesn't work. It may do for some people. I'm not saying it doesn't work. Yeah. It's just that for people who are emotional beings, I think CBT doesn't quite get to the emotions, because I know when I did CBT, it worked for things like getting me to go to a job interview, and I got it. So it definitely works in terms of helping you to change your thoughts and getting you to do different things, which is great. But then what happens when you have an anxiety attack at your new job? This is the kind of thing, it's like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily solve this problem, because the thing is about emotions is that they are trauma-based. And so I've found trauma-based therapy really, really helpful, and body-based therapy. So going into the body. So it's not just about the mind. It's actually feeling what's inside of my body right now. How do I feel? What's going on for me right now? And this is so important, because when we're talking about mental health, we always think about thoughts, but we forget about feelings. And it's also about feelings and emotional well-being, not just mental health. So I think that's an important part of it. And yeah, what I was going to talk to you about today, because me and Chris were talking about, okay, what topic should we talk about? What have we been writing recently? And I've just been writing a little bit about how artists work for free a lot. A lot of my friends are artists, yeah, and a lot of us are out here kind of doing a lot of work, and we're not always getting paid properly. And I think this is a real problem within the artist community, because what happens is it's not that people are purposefully not wanting to pay artists. This is not what happens. Most people genuinely would do want to pay people. What happens is we get a culture where it's like, oh well, I'll do this for you and you do this for me, and we're all struggling, so yeah, we'll just do things for each other. And in some ways, this kind of mentality, yeah, is great, because it creates a community element where you're more talking about people than money, and more talking about the work, which is, yeah, the art, and doing things for each other. So this creates is a very positive thing. It's not a negative. The negative comes when you have some people who have extra income, so it's not a problem for them, and then you have other people who are actually that's their job, and that's that they need to pay bills and they need to have food on the table, and they end up either having to work in something that's not their passion, or they end up having to work a million jobs, or try to live really cheaply, or there's just so many different elements of it. And I'm working on trying to write something about it and how it's felt for me, but I'm not quite sure if it's there yet. But I'll just
I know a copywriter that could do that for you.
Yeah, well, this is what Chris said, but it's more of a poem rather than a piece of writing. But I mean, I can read it out for you, and maybe have some thoughts and ideas, and maybe I could add to it.
Yeah,
I've just put. Would you work for free? Tell me, how many hours would you give of your time gladly? It's such a nuanced situation, for some artists have other occupations, but would you work for free? Would you like to be talked over when you're sharing something that you put your heart and soul into as its creator? And I know we do it for the love, and I know we do it to connect with the one above. Or is it something deep inside? Or is it the ones all around us? Who's to decide? Receiving for our work feels so great. It's like when you order dinner and there's something on your plate and you can afford it without asking your mum to help you out. But would the chef make meals for free? So this is just something that I literally just wrote down, and I was like, okay, it can be kind of funny, but like also just real.
Yeah, and do you know what, you've absolutely captured it there. And I think especially in the creative industry, a lot of people will start off as, you know, say if they're an artist or a singer or whatever, it will start off as being a hobby. And I think people don't charge for hobbies, but when it becomes something more, then 100% they should be charging for it. And I think people would be happy to pay for it as well. But I think you'll find a lot of freelancers that are just starting out. They will, again, undercharge or not charge at all, just so they get a bit of a reputation going. But in actual fact, they should be charging straight from the get-go. Because... like you say, would a chef cook you dinner for free? No. Can you walk into Tesco's and go and get a weekly shop for free? No, you can't. So I think, you know, you put it into that kind of, exactly, you put it into a bit of context, and you're like, well, do you know what? You're providing something, be it a beautiful painting or a sculpture or something like that. You have put your physical hours into that, so why shouldn't you be paid for it? So, but also in the same vein as well, don't undercharge, just make sure that you charge what you were.
It's definitely something that I know can relate to a lot of people, so hopefully they can relate to it. Chris, do you have any thoughts on the topic?
Yeah, I'm thinking particularly performance arts, but you can adapt it to paintings and sculpture and written material as well. I mean, basically, there's several possible sources of income. You can charge admission. You can ask for donations. You can apply for grants. But one that interests me in particular is patronage. And I think one of the problems artists have as business people is that when you announce I am now in business, I'm a professional writer or singer or whatever, then the culture of business assumes that you have customers. And I suppose if you're charging admission to an event, you could argue that that's true. but in actual fact, what we want from our artists is art. And it's not necessarily buying it from them. It's actually helping them to find the space and the time so that they can actually create it. Now, if you go back in the past to, I don't know, composers like Mozart, they had patrons. And they were expected to compose music for special events, but they were supported all the time so they could do other things. I mean, for example, Michelangelo, when he, I think it was the sculpture David, which you probably know, he was given a mansion to borrow while he made this sculpture, and he created this thing in the mansion. But when the owner of the mansion came back, they discovered that it filled every room with other sculptures, you know, because he was just being creative all the time. And it's that sort of. Or when Leonardo da Vinci died, they found in his attic loads and loads of what we now call cartoons. So when you go to an exhibition of Leonardo da Vinci's cartoons, they were his rough drawings. They weren't meant to be displayed as works of art. I mean, they are works of art. It's that creativity without thinking, is anybody going to like this? Is anybody going to pay for this? And actually getting that pressure removed so that you can actually create and discover new stuff.
I've been quite lucky in the sense of that because I've been writing so long.
I think ultimately everybody would love the freedom, the time and whatever to create whatever they want to create. In reality, a lot of the time people work as well, so it might be something that they do in the spare time, but there's still no reason why they shouldn't be charging for it. And as well, I mean, with the support that comes with it, I mean, everyone's got a support network around them. They've got friends, family, social media, you know, you name it. That support network is there if you want to. Okay, they're not going to supply you with, a big, huge mansion to go and create your stuff in. But, at the end of the day, I think what you'll find with creative people is that they just love to create. So whatever little gap of time that they have, they will be spending that creating, which is amazing.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't charge. What I'm saying is how we see that charge. Yeah, because a customer might say, Gemma, I want you to write a song for my wedding. So they'll expect Gemma to deliver a song for their wedding. and that's a piece of work. Whereas a patron or a follower is someone who says, I'm going to support you and I'd love to see what you create.
There's a difference.
Do you see? Now it might work. It might operate as a charge in both cases. But
yeah,
they are different,
one of them
I think.
Is sort of telling you're using the artists, and I think this is it's probably something that happens a lot and is a problem where I say it's a problem. It's okay, but it's like, for example, when I used to do dance. Well, I still do dance teaching occasionally, but it's not my main job anymore. But I used to do dance teaching as pretty much my main job. And I remember when we used to do the shows and we were told, right, this is the theme. This is what you need to, these are the, and I wanted to pick a certain song. And then I remember it was like, no, you've got to do Cats. And it was like, okay. So I then got really upset because I was saying, like, I didn't want to do Cats. I wanted to do a different thing. I can't even remember the song I wanted to do, but and I remember my colleague saying to me that you can be creative with whatever you're given. So I love what you're saying about, like, if you're creative, you will be creative. And I remember I went, right, okay, I'm gonna do Cats and I'm gonna do it really well. and Cats went down really well. People were talking about it after. I got the kids to do like cheerleading lifts. So in the Cats outfits, they did a cheerleading lift, and it was amazing. So Cats doing cheerleading. Because I used to be a cheerleader, so I used my skills of knowing a little bit about that. I wasn't an amazing cheerleader because I was always scared, I was great at cheering. But I wasn't so good at stunts. But I knew a little bit about it. So anyways, I guess I'm going off the point, but so you can definitely be creative within someone else's idea of what they want you to do. And then at the same time, if you're doing too much of that, it can get very stifling for a creative. For example, because I knew that I wrote songs, and yet I didn't have that outlet when I was doing dance teaching, because I was always having to create to other people's songs and make dances up, and I felt like this is annoying because I have all these songs and nobody knows I'm a singer. Like, and it was just so annoying. So then even when I was teaching singing, it's a very limiting thing if you can't actually use the skills that you have in terms of creativity. So then I set up my own business, and I made sure that songwriting was a major part of it, because that's what I knew I was really good at, and I wanted to improve my production skills and, you know, still use dance because I love dance, but also incorporate, you know, that's why I also had Find Your Voice, because I wanted other people to find their voice. And, you know, if we have other songwriters out here and they're not using their skills, it's like I wanted to give other people an opportunity to find their voice and be able to sing. And even if it's not songwriting, maybe it's writing. Like, for example, one of my clients ended up being in The New Woman with me, which is a book, a women's anthology. So she got to tell her story in a book. And that wouldn't have, you know, she wasn't writing at the time when I started coaching her, but she was a writer. So I just love helping people to find that voice inside of them and know where to channel it as well, and how to channel it. And yeah, so that's my little story. But yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, thank you, Gemma. There's the creativity in our lives, but what I want to talk about is the echoes of that creativity beyond our lives. And to do this, I want to take you back in time a very long way to when we watched television in black and white, and one of the great television programs of that time, which I'm sure was before both of you were even glimmers in your parents' eyes, was a cowboy program called Bonanza. It had a wonderful signature tune. Dan da dan da dan da dan da 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 da. And it was about four cowboys, a father and three sons, who mysteriously lived together, and the women in their lives just sort of occasionally drifted through, but there were always these four. And they lived in a ranch called Ponderosa, which apparently, according to a friend of mine, is Old Spanish for wise woman. And somehow or other, Ponderosa has become the name of a piece of land, open space, in Sheffield. And I used to know someone whose stage name I thought was Granny Zero. It turned out that her group was called Granny's Heroes, but it took me about 2 years to realise that she wasn't Granny Zero, and I still think of her as Granny Zero. And she claimed that her sons played out on the Ponderosa, and they played cowboys, and that's how it got its name. But I did a calculation. I reckon her sons must have been about 30 when they were playing out as cowboys. So I'm a bit sceptical about that. According to the interpretation board, it was a council officer who named it Ponderosa, and I don't believe that either. The origins are lost in the mist of time. But if you walk up through the Ponderosa, you were up the hill, and at the top there's a part of it called the tip, because it was a tip, and it's a playing field that's lifted high above the path, so as you're walking up, the path will be it'll be on the right of you on the path, and on the left there's another bank that goes up to Mushroom Lane, which got its name through another wonderful story. Now, the that bank, when I arrived and started living around there in 1989, was covered in grass. By the time I left, it was still covered in grass, but it had little trees, what they call whips, planted in it. And I got the community together to plant all those trees. And now, 30 years on, it's a wood. And I realized fairly recently that in some respects, that's my anonymous legacy. Of all the things I've done in my life, that little wood is going to be the thing that survives me. And soon, you know, when Gemma and Sarah and people listening to this podcast have all passed away with me, and we're all living it up in heaven or wherever you go, or is it? that will be my anonymous legacy. It'll still be there, but no one will know who actually organised the tree planting or any of that. That will all be forgotten. And I've done lots of other things that are more complex and possibly more exciting, but most of those have disappeared. But this is a lasting legacy. If you dig down, the first thing that comes to my mind as I imagine going down through the soil is these trees, do they all know one another? Are they all connected by fungus yet? Have all the fungal mycelia travelled around and connected all those trees together? Because woods are living organisms, and the longer the wood is there, it's 30 years long enough, or is it 50 years, or yeah, or 100 years, or 500 years before you can call it a sort of ancient woodland. So that's exciting. Dig down a little bit further, and it gets even more interesting, because that bank actually had a road that zigzagged down it. It went zig, zag, zig, and there were houses on one side of the road all the way down. Yeah, when you see the bank, you just cannot visualize. I've actually seen a photograph of it, and it really did exist. And how they managed and how those houses survived, I don't know. But the end, if you start at the top, zigzag, zig, the end house was a corner shop, which sold sweets, and across the tip, on the other side of the tip, there was a school, and the children used to run across the tip and to the corner shop and buy their sweets, because there were no roads in between. And I had a conversation with the head teacher. This was in the late 80s, early 90s, while we were planting those trees. And he told me that the children had done some digging around there, and they dug up oyster shells and clay pipes. And what was happening was that people had indoor coal fires in those days. Oysters were cheap food, and they used to throw the shells on the fire, and they would smoke the pipes, and when a pipe broke or whatever, they'd throw that on the fire as well. And then they tipped the ashes onto the tip, which was quite a logical thing to do. So it's interesting, as you dig down, there's more anonymous legacy. Who were the people who lived in those houses? Who built those houses in the first place? Which planning authority was mad enough to allow them to do it? Yeah, there's all this going on, and you can multiply this if you think of your own house and where you live. Who were your predecessors living there? Who built your house? This is all part of the stage set, if you like, of our lives. And our lives depend on what people were doing before we were around. And we don't know who. It may be possible to research and find out a little bit about them, but we don't know that. We walk down the street. Most of the time, we don't know what's under our feet. We have a rough idea there'll be a few sewers and cables and things. But sometimes it's more than that. In the city centre of Sheffield, there are great tunnels through which the River Sheaf, from which Sheffield got its name, flows. And there's a massive tunnel under Corporation Street called the Megatron, and it's absolutely huge. I've not seen it live, but I've seen photographs of it. And people walking on the top I've no idea. They said, why did they build that? Well, my answer to that is it's to stop the buses falling into the River Sheaf. But you know, this is the reality of our lives. We're walking on the past, or what's happening above us as we walk along. Maybe not so much residential streets, but when we get into the town centre and you've got the shops on the ground floor, what's above them? Maybe another floor of the shop, maybe people's flats, maybe government agencies spying on us, or who knows? And disused buildings and urban exploration. There's so much going on around us that we're not aware of, but that is actually the backdrop to our stories. And a lot of it was created by people who are long forgotten. I don't really know what to do with this as an observation, but that's what I mean by anonymous legacy.
That's what I think.
Got that underway, really? Possibly.
I agree.
Have you started it?
I don't know. I've written something, and it's currently with someone to tell me whether it's worth pursuing.
Okay,
it.
Well, even if they say it's not, then still keep the idea. Still keep going with it, because I think that, well, I keep saying to Chris that he needs to, but then that's just me probably, because I also need to do things as well. But I always encourage people to leave a legacy of what they've, because if somebody has a good idea, then obviously once they're gone, that idea needs to be passed on. And that's basically what Chris is sort of talking about here, in terms of when with the objects and things around us and how things have been built and the artwork and everything, and everything is connected. So when we can leave something of value with others, then that means that we live on, basically, in a sense, because we're within, you know, whether it's a book or whether it's the Ponderosa, whether it's whatever, even if you go into a coffee shop and you remember the time that you sat with someone there or something, or they contributed something to it, a painting or something.
Yeah. I think that's it. I mean, it reminds me of I have a recipe book, and that recipe book has recipes from my great grandmother, who's long since passed, then passed down to my grandmother, who's long since passed, then went down to my mother, and now it's with me. So that has passed through four generations down to me, and then I will then pass it on as well. And it's stuff like that. I mean, even though these are my family, but as the years have gone on, each one of us has added our own recipes to it and added to it. And I think things like that is having like a legacy when you do go. I think, you know, I want to make sure that I've stamped my mark on the planet before I do go. So if I can do that through my writing, or if I can do that through helping other people start their own business, their freelance journey, if I can leave something like that, then hey, that'll make me happy.
Yes, I mean, a lot of business people talk about their legacy, the legacy of this particular business, and I think often when they talk about it, it's a named legacy. It's part of an ego thing. But I think part of what I'm saying, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that at all. If it's a value, it's valuable. But it's just being aware that many of us leave a trail as we go through life that others will eventually appreciate, even though they won't know that it was us who created it.
Yeah, so you're sort of saying like an unknown legacy, and that's why there's sort of a magic to it in a way, because we're all supported by all these people that have, whoever made this house, for example, whoever made your house, whoever made the seat that you're sat on or the headphones that you're listening to. None of us know these people, but they are a part of our life because they've contributed to what we're now sitting on or listening to. Yeah, so is there anything else you wanted to say on that, Chris, before we finish the podcast?
No, I think we've covered that.
So, Sarah, how can we get in touch with you if anyone's listening who's got to the end of the podcast and they think, you know, I want to get in touch with Sarah, I want to find out more about her? How do they find out?
So I am on every social media platform that you can possibly even imagine. I've sent my links over to Chris, who I believe will pop those on so you can get in touch with me. Straight off the bat, you can email me at Sarah with an H dot English at hotmail.co.uk. I'll pick up any emails from there. And other than that, my telephone number, website and everything is with Chris.
Yeah, I can't remember. Have you put a link in for the Thursday thread?
I haven't, but I can do. That's not a problem.
Because that's an opportunity to meet with Sarah, and I'm there most weeks, and it's a business network meeting with an international community.
Yeah, free networking with people all across the world. Anyone's welcome to come. It's very relaxed and very chilled out. So I will send my link over to Chris, who will kindly put that up for me. That'd be great.
Thank you. And Chris, how do we get in touch with you?
Yeah, all the usual links are below. I run Telling Stories Making Business, so I'm always looking for storytellers, and that is restarting in September. I'm resting it over the summer now, but I am always looking for people who'd be willing to tell a story, and obviously this podcast as well. So all the details are in the show notes.
Yep.
How about you, Gemma? Anything new?
I don't know about new. Well, I've got a new single out. It's called Everything Is You, and the video's on YouTube, and you can listen to the song on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, and you can find me on Facebook, Gemma Rosenthal, and you can also find Creative Hearts on Facebook and Instagram as well. I'm also on Instagram as Gemma Rosenthal, and I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, TikTok, pretty much all the social medias, and you can also join my group Awakening Voices on Facebook, where if you want to share anything of your voice, you can do that on there. If you want to do Find Your Voice sessions with me, then just drop me a message on any of those platforms and you can have a free chat with me on whether coaching sessions will be good. And I think that's about everything for now. Thank you, Sarah, so much for being on the podcast. Thank you, Chris, for co-hosting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And yeah, make sure you listen to all the rest of the episodes we have, and we'll see you soon for the next one.